May it please the court, your honors. My name is Steve Delaney, and I'm the attorney for Joseph Giannetti, who is the appellant in this matter. This is an appeal from Cass County District Court for a dissolution matter. There are a number of assignments there that are laid out in our brief and also in our pleadings. In essence, the main focus is the three-step classification of property for the court to do. One, it has to classify the property as either marital or non-marital. Second, it has to value that property. And thirdly, it has to divide that property equitably and in accordance with the marital estate.
I want to ask you about your choice of pronouns on the second step, to value that property. What property?
All property. Marital property. The court has to make the determination of what is marital, what is not marital property.
That's step one.
Correct.
Marital versus non-marital.
And then comes the valuation.
If the answer is it's non-marital, does the court value the non-marital property?
No.
Okay, so your answer then really on step two to that property is the marital property.
Yes.
Value the marital property.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So what we had here is a FERS, a Federal Employees Retirement System account. We also had what's called a Thrift Savings Account, a TSP. Mr. Giannetti works for the United States Department of Justice and has worked there for approximately 25 years. Prior to that time, he worked for the Bellevue Police Department as a police officer, and he worked there for 17 years.
Counsel, is the TSP a defined contribution account?
It is.
So did Mr. Giannetti select the amount from each paycheck that would go into that account on a regular basis? Is that a choice he made?
I believe he made the choice of how much would go into that account.
Did he make any change in that amount during the party's marriage?
No.
Did he also select the fund that would govern the investment decisions in that account?
I believe they have a range of when you want to retire. So if you pick 2040 to 2050, it then goes into a defined set of different.
When did your client make that decision?
That would have been made. I don't know that it was evidence on it. I think when Mr. Lee did his evaluation, he was able to capture what he said were the non-marital shares versus the marital shares. And for example, on the date of the marriage, Mr. Lee showed that there were 21,485.8536 shares of TSP stock. And through the rollover through the Bellevue Police Department, there were an additional 4,839.3736 shares that were purchased. The additional shares, to round out the amount at the time of the filing and also at the time of trial, there were additional 5,479.6723.
And those were marital?
Those were purchased during the marriage. And so...
Does that make a difference? Those were marital? Those shares, the last group?
Those shares are marital, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
The only thing that changed between the time that these were purchased and the time of the trial was the valuation of those shares. The market forces would change. So what Judge Funk did in this case is the court made a finding that it took the value on the date of marriage and a value at the time of the trial divided in two. Unfortunately, by doing that, it then awarded Ms. Stanishak a portion of the premarital shares that were purchased prior to the marriage. And a significant amount. The shares owned at the time of marriage was the 21,045 plus the 4,839, but based on the valuation done by the trial court, Mr. Giannetti was only awarded 18,157 of those shares. And we believe that was the untenable result, the
Were any of these shares purchased during the marriage?
Yes, there were 5,479.6723 shares purchased during the marriage.
Counsel, what's the purpose of shares in the context of this TSP?
That's how the value is done. You put money in there, you buy a share, and then that share remains. So you cash it out. That you always maintain. He always had 21,485 shares when he was married. He always had 4,839 that were purchased by the rollover from the Bellevue 401k plan. There was always 5,479 shares purchased during the time of the marriage. And so the shares does not change. The value of those shares change, but the shares themselves do not change.
And during the marriage, the value of the shares went both up and down, isn't that right?
Presumably, with respect to that last category, the 5,000 and some shares, at the date of the marriage, that number was zero. And over time, as there were contributions during the marriage, that number increased to 5,000, whatever it was.
Yes. Right? Yes, the marital funds purchased that 5,479 shares. So so that is one of the errors that we had complained about. Obviously, the date valuation as well is one of the other errors. And I know I'm going to run out of time here.
If you calculate in terms of money what you think that error in the TPS or TLS, which whatever those shares are, what do you think that, what would that amount be?
I don't have the exact figure, but I believe it's somewhere at $175,000, $180,000. And it also made a difference, though, on the date evaluation, whether it was going to be the date of the filing, which would have been January 28, 2014, or the date of the trial, January 2015. The difference between those dates, just in the TSP account alone, is, I believe, $80,000. And I believe the evidence was that the parties lived together for a short period of time after they filed, but they didn't commingle any assets. They didn't purchase any property. They did not have any joint accounts together. Therefore, there was nothing that was done in a marital fashion or in order to increase the value of that account.
Should it make any difference that the wife had a similar account that was treated dissimilarly?
Well, I think, and I don't want to speak for the athlete, but I believe that there is an agreement that there was an error that was made in the court in the valuation of the appellee's. And I'll allow her to address that. I think she addressed it in her brief. And the last issue that I will have time to address would be the $12,000 court said was a marital asset. We were asking that be set aside to Mr. Gennetti. That represented he had made all of the loan payments on the TSP loan, which is what they used to build their house, and he didn't get credit for any of those payments that he made. He was the only one who made those payments. So we believe the court in equity should have given him those monies. Thank you.
You may proceed. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. May it please the court, Mr. Delaney. My name is Amy Martinez, and I have the pleasure of representing Elizabeth Stanishek in his process here today. The appellant's assignments of error really restated address four issues. The first of those is the date of the valuation of the marital assets. The second is the amount of the premarital set-off to which the parties are entitled. The third is this $12,000 in equity. And then the fourth really has to do with what I think is just an error by the trial court, and I would concede, I think this is what Mr. Delaney was speaking to. The court in its findings indicated that all of her retirement accounts, the marital portions of those would be divided by 50%. The decreed portion simply failed to mention that. I think it's clear that that should be corrected.
Well, was it just, oh, excuse me.
Yes.
Please.
Wasn't the decree prepared by counsel?
Yes.
Isn't a little disingenuous to blame this on the trial court?
I'm not sure how to respond to that. I would try not to characterize it.
Wouldn't it be fair to state that the two of you together, or whoever were the trial counsel, if you weren't the trial counsel, it's just as much your fault as the trial judge's?
Yes, sir. Certainly. It is our error.
Okay.
I apologize. I missed the point of your question.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting Judge Hunk made any error. I think it was really, what I had included in my notes is that it was a scrivener's error. And we were, in fact, for the scrivener. So that's an error on our part. My point is merely that we can correct that easily by going back to the judge saying, it's clear that this was the intent of the court. We failed to include that as part of the decree, and it should be corrected.
Do you think you could have done that during the pendency of this appeal by an order non-proton?
I'm not sure, frankly, if the court has the jurisdiction to do that while it's up.
You want to look at 25-2001 sub 3 when you get a chance?
I certainly do. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm happy to do that. So yes, I think that we could have corrected that error.
All right.
I apologize.
Let's talk about shares versus money. Isn't that the heart of this?
Yes.
Mr. Delaney's saying, should have been shares set aside, and what the judge did was allocated a sum of money.
Yes, and I think that is the real question, is whether the passive accumulation of interest on a retirement account during marriage is marital. And so to respond to your question, Justice Castle, about when you have a non-marital asset, is it something that you have to value or not? Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. If it's a car, you don't, because you just take the car and give it to the person.
Well, he's arguing 21,000 shares plus 4,000 shares. I'm just going to say 25,000.
Right.
There was 25,000 shares, and nobody's disputing that those were premarital, right?
Right.
So why would you value those at all? Why doesn't he just get those?
Because, as Justice Stacy was asking, is if you look at, I think it's Exhibits 13 and 14, which are the report of Mr. Lee, they don't reference anything about those accounts being self-directed. If you look at, I think it's Exhibit 18, which is the summary of the statements on the TSP account, the Thrift Savings Plan account, it is self-directed. It is done through the efforts of the party during the time of the marriage. And that's the case law that we have, at least up until Kupal, if I'm saying that name correctly, is that any efforts of the parties, right, during the marriage can make that asset marital. And if it can be attributed to one party more than the other, then it's still marital. And in this case, if the answer is these are the shares, okay, and they were valued at X, whatever X is, then the accumulation of that is not attributable to one party or the other.
I think the question was asked of your opponent, was there ever a change of the investments? Was there ever a change of the investment?
It's unclear. And that was part of my point with Mr. Lee's assessment of this, is you can't tell what the specific investments are. There are a particular number of pages, if anyone's interested, I'm pleased to cite those, that talk about this level of risk for which you are selecting your prior contributions, your existing body of investments. Are you going to change that? And then also for the new things that you are contributing, the new funds that you're contributing, where you want those directed. So it is something that can be changed throughout the process as to the level
was it
of
changed?
Price.
Was it changed during the course of the marriage?
Justice Miller-Lerman, I don't think that it was based on the few statements that are there. But I don't know that that's anything that Mr. Lee ever even considered as to whether those assets inside of each of those shares, whether those assets changed in value. Because what you can't tell is perhaps the new shares, this gets complicated.
Are new shares subject to the existing direction?
They come in at a different direction. So in Mr. Genetti's instance, he actually had the same plan for both existing and income. So I guess what I'm saying is you can't tell if his existing rate of return was a -3% and his incoming rate of return was a +18%. And so for a net of that difference. Does that make sense?
Counsel?
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't mean to interrupt. I think what you're suggesting is that there's sort of a premarital corpus and then a corpus that was accumulated.
particular pages that is referenced in these statements is your rate of return is a positive 1.08%. Your rate of return is a positive 12%. But you can't tell if that's just on the existing amount or on the incoming amount, the marital portion as well. And Mr. Lee didn't make any effort to say, well, you had these X shares or these X investments, and those things were losing money, but your new investments are gaining money. So for a net, it's a lower rate of return. I don't know if that makes any sense. I've tried to write it out several ways.
If we were to look only at shares, as Mr. Delaney suggests is the right way to view it, is there any way to capture the passive accumulation that occurred during the marriage?
No.
Thank you.
Based on the record that's there. And that is really the heart of the concern here, is that to say all of the gain that is, according to Mr. Gennetti, attributable to those non-marital portions is not supported by the record. And I have an entire presentation, but I wanted to jump ahead, and I think it was you, Justice Castle, that asked a question about, didn't she have a similar account that was not treated the same? And the way I understood your question was really referring to her, what we call the NPERS account, the Nebraska Public Employees Retirement Systems account, that she had that was cashed in April of 2013. Parties were married in 2008. She cashed in her account in 2013, rolled it into the Smith Hays. That NPERS account is actually the very same type of account that was used in Poofall. That's the one that...
Is this with a statutory rate?
Yes, ma'am.
So you don't have to think.
Right. It's the guaranteed rate. That's how I see Poofall, which I think the very first line is, our conclusions and our findings are limited specifically to the facts in this case. That NPERS account and the gain that she had would be subject to Poofall. Now, there's nothing in the record about that because Poofall came out in July. This decision was actually rendered in May of 15. And so if in the event that you should decide that this should be reversed, I am asking that you remand and send it back down for us to have a new trial so that all of the information can be put into the record. And this issue about attributing the gain seen on the account to the particular non-marital portion can actually be ferreted out. Did that speak to your question, Justice Castle, that
yes,
you were asking?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. As to the data evaluation, one of the points I wanted to make, and you all are very familiar with family law cases, there are really three situations that we look at, or dates that we look at: data filing, data separation, sometimes those are in reverse order, and date of trial. There have been cases that have come up before you all that you've affirmed each of those dates as being appropriate, as long as they are reasonably related to the property at that time. In this case, nothing was valued at the time of filing. Nothing. The house the parties lived in from January until October, the value of that house was determined by the sale price in October. During that period of time, the parties also, as they appeared before the court at trial, stipulated to the value of personal property. That was at the time of trial. That was not data filing. So for the court to say these parties were pooling their money as they lived in this home, and they were sharing expenses, and there was no temporary alimony, it makes sense that they would continue to get the credit or the benefit of all of their continued contributions to the retirement accounts and the investment earnings on those accounts up until the date of trial. So I think the court was very consistent. One of the other points I wanted to make is that it is within the court's discretion to equitably divide. It doesn't have to be 50-50 divide. So as I explained to clients, each time they come in, you all have told us, anywhere between one-third, two-thirds, or 50-50, that's all within the discretion of the court. And so in this case, the difference, may I finish my thought, please? The difference in those accounts really is either she says it's about $300,000 of investment income or of non-marital portion. Again, depending on the date, is either about 100 and I think it's 117 or 142,000. So really the difference is going to be that difference. So between somewhere between 160 and $180,000 of interest on that account, or again because of the date evaluation, that's what we're talking about. So for my client, for Ms. Stanishek, it would be the difference, half of that difference. So half of 160, half of 180, which is, as you can see, a very significant amount.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you very much.
Any rebuttal?
Yes, he has a minute 29.
One of the items addressed by...
Not to use too much of your time, but you're going to share in Ms. Martinez the blame for not getting that changed.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go ahead. All right.
And I pronounce it COFL. I don't know how it's actually pronounced, but I think that case is instructive in this case. When this court decided that case, it stated that only that portion earned during the marriage is part of the estate. Appreciation in separate property, marital property, to the extent that it was caused by marital funds or efforts. None of that was done with anything other than the 5,479 shares. The corporal opinion stands for the proposition that the court has to separate those funds out, that the appreciation in the value of that TSP account that was based upon the premarital shares always remains as part of the premarital property.
In COFL, didn't we liken the account at issue there to a certificate of deposit, one with a guaranteed rate of return?
You did.
How does this account fit with that kind of an analogy?
Well, one of the things that the court did in the COFL opinion was cite the Brett Turner Equitable Distribution of Property and also Van Newkirk, where it talked about other than market forces and the appreciation of value. So I don't think that, yes, the COFL was the NPERS guaranteed rate of return, but that wasn't the, in my opinion, that was not the basis for that ruling. It was a factor that went along with that ruling, and it was easy to define. But I don't believe that that was the reason that that case was decided.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the arguments for this morning, and parties are excused, and we are adjourned.